Well, this summer, do you remember that season? Yeah. Well, we were all in our gardens enjoying the lovely weather, our patios, our outdoor markets. But a terrifying tourist made itself known to Ireland, the Asian hornet. Big, bold, really unwelcome. An invader buzzing into our backyards and, well, at times, our beer gardens. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and I'm wondering, have you seen one yet? Are you as interested in this as I am? If you did see one, did it make you jump? Did it send you running indoors? Did you manage to catch a picture? Did you report it? And you know, these hornets, they aren't the only aliens making life tricky for us humans and other wildlife and the wider ecosystem, right? Squirrels, rhododendron, wild boar. There's a whole army of invaders out there, and they are changing things in a way you and I might not even notice. But I can't think of anyone better to help us understand all of this than biologist and broadcaster and somebody who has noticed the Asian hornet and has actually seen one up close. It's Aina Nilaina. You're very, very welcome.
Oh, thank you very much indeed, Ciara. It's great to be here.
Now, I need to start, right? This is going to be a deep dive. We are going to talk Asian hornets to those who are not biologists and who are not specialists in this area. What is it?
It's a big wasp.
Oh, right. There you go.
Yeah, because hornets and wasps belong to one family of creatures, and bees are a completely different family of creatures, and wood wasps and sawflies are a different family again. They have this yellow and black coloration, all of them. And this is warning to predators not to eat them, because you get stung on the mouth if you eat one. So this is a warning coloration. So that's what they are. But the thing about the bees is that bees are herbivores. So bees eat plants. So you get the honeybees collecting pollen to feed the babies, but they make the protein from pollen, and then they collect nectar to make honey to feed themselves as grown-ups. The wasps, on the other hand, feed their babies with protein that they get from animal sources. And this is the thing, our wasps, the ordinary wasps over here that we used to hate, but now we think they're grand by comparison with the Asian
ones. We're not allowed to touch them. Kids know this.
Yeah, but the wasps that we have here in Ireland, they eat green flies and black flies and white flies, which we don't want in our garden. So we should be delighted to have wasps, unless you want green flies sucking your roses and white flies eating your cabbages and all that kind of carry on. So that's what they do. That's grand. They're part of our ecosystem. No problem. But now the hornets are a bigger version of this. They're a different group in the wasp family, if you like. And there are two in Europe. There's European hornet, which they've always had. We never had that over here. And then we have this Asian hornet, which is spread right across from Asia, naturally enough. And it's a very aggressive hornet, and it gets its protein very smartly from mostly eating bees. That's why it's causing problems. Now, it eats other things as well, because it needs meat. I saw one in France. I'm just back from being holidays in Brittany, and I was at one of the markets there, and I was looking at all the things on sale, as you do, and there was a big stand with octopuses, all big slidey octopuses, and it was about six hornets walking on the octopus, obviously sussing it out for the protein content of the octopus. Now, I didn't...
Well, God, they've got expensive taste, don't they?
I didn't see them chopping them up or anything, but they're very well able to manage the honeybees. And what they do is they hang around the honeybee's nest, a hive, and the beekeepers have maybe hives of honeybees, have a lot of bees. They could have 30, 40,000 bees. And they wait outside, grab a bee, pull it apart, because it's the muscle they want. They don't want the honey. They don't want any of that sort of thing out of the bee. They actually want the muscles out of the bee's chest, tear it apart and go off with it to feed the young. And, you know, they can decimate a hive. 7 kilograms of bees can be demolished by a hornet in a small space of time. So
what size are they then?
They're not that big. I mean, they're not huge. Like, they're not as big as butterflies. They're about an inch long. If you look at your thumb, your nail is a half an inch and the other half is down to your first knuckle. So it would be from the top of your thumb to the first knuckle. Bend your thumb and it's about that length.
Okay, so about 2 centimetres and the...
Yeah, two and a half centimetres.
Yeah, yeah. And the queens, I think, are a bit bigger. They're about three centimetres.
Well, the queens are out flying around as well. I mean, we don't care if we see a worker, because the workers can't lay eggs, and they can't can't produce new queens. But the workers are an indication that there is a nest there. And if you see workers and you tag them, they go home to mammy, and then you'll find the whole nest. And that's what they have been doing in Cork very successfully, in finding the nests. So that's what the hornet is.
So just for creature, people who are listening, because I know they're actually encouraging people, if you see these things, please do report it to the National Parks and Wildlife Service. Does it have any distinguishing features or a distinguishing sound, Aoife?
No, it looks very black. It doesn't look a stripy wasp like another thing. It's a black insect with an orange face. Now, how often do you look at insects' faces? That's around the front of it. And then if you look at the back of it, it's all black. And then the second last segment is a big yellowy orangey band. And then there's a small little tiny band of colour underneath. It looks like it has knee socks of yellow on it. So it has the yellow part of its legs up to what you might call the bee's knees, up to its knees in yellow. And then just this large segment at the back.
And you said it feeds primarily off the honeybee here. That's what makes it
such a hassle. Yeah, he'll eat other things. But I mean, we don't care if it eats. No, it doesn't want to eat people at all.
But would they sting?
No, only if you're over poking at its nest. I mean, it's not going to fly out after you, because it isn't like our wasps. See, our wasps, what happens to our wasps at this time of the year in the autumn time is that the queen, we have one queen, and the queen has laid the eggs that went off to be new queens. They mated and they've gone off to overwinter, and then the old queen lays another round of eggs and dies. And so what happens is now that the new worker wasps coming out don't have to feed the babies with chewed up stuff, because how do the grown up wasps get their sugar? And the grown up wasps get their sugar from licking the babies. There's no more babies to lick, so they haven't got any sugar. So they come to us because we have beautiful hair all covered in perfume. They think we're flowers, and we're outside drinking gin and tonics and eating jam sandwiches because we can't stay inside and eat. Everybody around seems to be out walking, eating all the time. And they come to get the food, and then we whack them, and then they come and attack us. The hornets don't do that. They're not looking for sugar. They're not coming to attack us eating our jam sandwiches. So unless you go and poke at them or give them trouble. So if you see one, it's not going to make a beeline to you and sting you. So they're not aggressive in that sense, unless you're the person taking down their nest in the which event you have the hazmats and all the rest of the stuff on naturally not to get stung. Yeah.
Okay, so they could sting you if you provoke them. And
yeah.
Is it like an ordinary wasp sting?
I would imagine, unless you're allergic, and some people are allergic to stings, and then it's like one of these anaphylactic shock, but it's an ordinary sting of a nettle sting. But mind you, one sting is sore and nasty. I mean, if 27 or 8, 28 of them all stung you together, it'd be a different matter. But you'd be the person attacking the nest at that stage, so you wouldn't be doing that.
No. So one of my favourite news reports this week, right, has come from Cork, and it was about the Asian hornet nest that had been discovered there. And the members of the National
Parks and Wildlife Service,
they were dressed head to toe in their hazmat suit as if they were about to go into a nuclear facility. It was really serious, but I mean, obvious reason.
Well, I thought they were just bee suits, the way beekeepers. Have you ever seen a beekeeper in a beekeeper
suit? That's all it was.
That's all it was. You get a grip, for God's sake. It's not a nuclear plant. I mean, if you see a beekeeper going off to take the honey, they have the whole big thing and the white clothes and the gloves.
They weren't smiling, it looked very serious.
Well, I mean, they could have been roaring laughing, but they had the bee twing over their face and you couldn't see them. I mean,
beekeeper's outfit. It's a beekeeper's outfit, yeah, not a hazmat suit. Okay, no, I stand corrected, Aoife. But anyhow,
I'm hoping to correct you.
The second part of the report that I was watching and really interested in was the actual nest itself.
Yeah.
So describe that for me.
Well, you see, the wasps build their nests out of paper. They were the original paper makers. So they look for timber, they chew it up like wood pulp, and they make the nest out of and it's a papery nest. So they start off with a little nest because that's mammy and laying the eggs, and then there's more babies and more babies and more babies. So it's like as if some mad person who bought a swanky house having an extension here, an extension there. In fact, I slag my friend sometimes, God, your house is like a wasp's nest. Every time I go down, you have another extension built on. So like it's a big, like, it could end up the size of a football. You know, it's a big paper nest, but it's made out of a papery structure, and there's hexagonal cells all through it. And each cell then has an egg inside in it, which comes on to be a baby, and then it's not used again. So if you want to lay more eggs, you have to make another extension and another extension and another extension. So the size of the nest will indicate how long it's been there for and how much it's been used. But it's only ever used for 1 year, because the old queen dies out. The new wasps queens that were fertilised and sent off at this time of the year with the Asian hornets is earlier with our wasps, but towards the end of September, October is when the new queen mated hornets will be going off to overwinter, and they will all set up new nests. They don't come back to the old nest. So the old nest is only ever used once.
And where do you typically find these nests?
Well, typically we have found two of them. So they were in trees, and that's where those particular nests are. In fact, they had great difficulty finding the first one. It was way up high in the sycamore tree. And that's where they are. But I mean, you get nests. I mean, our wasps, some of them are tree nesting species. Some of them are in the ground. Some of them are in your attic because there's loads of exposed timber up there and they'll make a wasp's nest up there. I mean, wherever there's a source of timber for them, essentially, to build it will be the case, yeah.
And if they do find an Asian hornet's nest, how many hornets would you expect to be in it?
Well, there'd be a couple of thousand, I suppose. I mean, at this time of the year, it's getting late in the season, so the workers are dying off, the queens are heading out. You could, but hornets' nests, more so than our wasps, could produce up to 300 queens that are, and they all go off and overwinter and hide in the curtains or in a quiet place. And possibly that's how we got the one in the first instance. It's somebody brought home something that had a hornet queen overwintering in it. I mean, you could bring home an ancient vase or pottery or something that you bought in the market. Or I'm not saying it did. I mean, it's not necessary that she brought home a banana with a wasp stuck to it. I mean, when they overwinter, they look for nice places where it's going to be dry. They could be in the curtains. They could be, you know, wherever they can find warmth and down the mouse hole, anywhere that it won't freeze where they'll have shelter. And then when spring comes out, they come, they're already mated, and all they go off to do then is start off with their building their new nest in springtime. So it's to make sure that these queens that are overwintering, they're the problem because they're going to set up nests. So if you had one nest this year, and 300 queens came out and they all overwintered, they're going to 300 nests next year. I mean, it's exponential.
So that's not normal, is it? You know, your ordinary wasp's nest wouldn't produce 300 queens.
No, our species wouldn't.
Ours doesn't. So these spread rapidly.
If they get wonderful circumstances. Now, because of climate change, our country is now warm enough in the very south of Ireland to have them. Before that, they wouldn't survive the winter because the winters would be too cold.
The queens wouldn't survive the winters, but now they will.
And they're in the south of England. So we're not expecting to find them above an Inish Trahull or on Torrey Island just yet. But the south coast, so I mean Waterford, Cork, places like that along the south coast, maybe up the east coast a bit.
Yeah, I think they found one in Dublin too.
That was just a random hornet. Yeah, they reckoned that was just a worker that might have come in on somebody's lunchbox or octopus that they were bringing in or something like that. So they had two nests which they have destroyed, the one in Inchicore, and they've had several other sightings as well. So they're keeping an eye because they have to find out, are these indicators of a nest or just a random one flying about? And they have wonderful ways of finding out. Originally, the first nest in Cork, they stuck pieces of paint and pieces of paper onto them so they could see them flying back to wherever they went, and they had to spend ages looking. But the second time round, because they're doing this in Britain now as well, they put tiny wee transmitters on them, and then they were able to put on their headphones and, zzz, and you could see where it was going, and they got the second nest in Cove quite quickly as a consequence. So that's why you don't want to kill the first one you see. You want to use it as a spy, catch it, put on the thing and let it off and see where it goes, and then you can get the whole kibosh, you know, that's the thing.
Right, so the key here really is detection and trying to get at it quickly before all those queens leave the nest.
That's the thing, and this is a very critical time, this time in September, because once those queens are mated and go off to hibernate, God knows where they are, and you won't find them at that point.
I was reading that on the island of Jersey, it has nearly 500 nests this year alone discovered.
That's the north of France. I know Britain says they own it, but it's actually on the north of France where there's a huge amount of them at present.
But that could be like 5 million hornets coming from those 500 nests.
Good, of course, yeah. I mean, they're very worried, I mean, because it's not so much the hornets in a sense, it's what they do. They kill all the bees, and the bees are needed to pollinate apples, to pollinate all the market fruit. I mean, imagine if we didn't have pollinating insects, we'd have to eat stuff that was wind pollinated. And what's wind pollinated? Grasses, rice, maize, corn, those kind of things. And there'll be no fruit, no vegetables, no nothing. All of those are pollinated by insects who bring pollen to flowers. So beans, peas, apples, cherries, almonds, you name it. All of those things need insects for pollination.
All the lovely stuff.
If they're all wiped out, then that's the problem, really. It's not so much the hornet in its sense. And the hornet doesn't have any enemies here in Ireland. It does abroad. I mean, things like the honey buzzard will eat hornets. things like the bee eater will eat hornets because they're able to wipe off the sting and eat it. But we don't have those creatures.
So we have no
here.
Natural predators
no,
here in
no
Ireland
natural,
to fight.
No,
other
no.
than the natural predators within the National Parks and Wildlife Service. Yes. That's who we're relying
and the,
on.
And the eyes of the public who will take pictures of these. But it's a very black insect. So things that are stripy all through can be other things. You know, wasps, they can be bees, they can be wood wasps, they can be acuminum flies. I mean, there's lots of things with that general array of colours because it's a Batesian mimicry. It's actually where you have this image of something. And if you wear the jersey, then the other people are afraid of you. So if you don't have a sting, well, who's the birds don't read our books? They don't read my new Wild Dublin book, for example.
They're lovely not plug. At things lovely
like
plug.
This. So they don't know that this thing doesn't have a sting and they just keep away from it. And that's why a lot of creatures have this successful coloration, black and yellow. It works. It deters the predators. So people like us who don't know the difference think anything that's black and yellow and big, because we don't know how big is big. You take a picture and blow it up on your phone and it's huge. You think, I've seen one, what have you. But I mean, that's what it is. So it's a popular colour among insects, if you like.
But what is the process for destroying those nests?
Well, we don't do these ourselves. If we see this, we get on immediately to the Parks and Wildlife Service. There's a special email address or a special website which we can give the details in a moment of, and you send that in, and they will come out and do it. They'll come out immediately. You do nothing. You just take a picture of it and send it off. That's
okay.
What they want.
And what do they do?
Well, they'll come out and see, first of all, is it a hornet? And then they will put their tracings in place. Like, they have these wee detectors now that they catch a few. They can get a hornet trap, and the beekeepers are really anxious to get this, because if they put the hornet trap in and they put in a lure for the hornets, they have a big hole at the top that the hornets can get in and they can't get out, whereas they have other holes let off the other insects out. So it's just a trap for hornets, and those kind of things will all indicate whether there's hornets or not. And then you send it into the special website that they have asked us to send it into.
Okay, from the report that I saw, they seem to spray a substance into the nest.
Oh, you mean how do they actually kill
it?
Then they will destroy the nest with a particular poison, but they don't want to burn it up or anything. They want to get the creatures inside, take them out, to get DNA analysis of them, see what they've done, and many of their work, count them and all of that. So if you see one and you throw a firelight into it, you've destroyed all the evidence. Or I'm not saying that you would. I mean, you'd burn the tree down. That would be ridiculous. So they would have special chemicals to do this, but I wouldn't recommend destroying a hornet's nest yourself. Get onto them. They'd be down like a shot to fix it, to sort it out. They're really worried about it, so you wouldn't be waiting long to get a response to your problem.
Have you any advice then for any beekeepers out there who are probably really worried about this?
Well, the beekeepers, I was listening to in a report from the beekeepers in Cork, and they're demanding that the government give them these hornet traps that they can put around where their nests are, that will be more attractive than the bees and attract these. But these traps cost €800 each, and the bait for them is another €200. So you're looking at a lot of money that beekeepers can't afford. So they feel that, particularly in the Cork area where there's 120 beekeepers, you know, that they should get support from the Department of Agriculture now while it's possible. No point in waiting until the horse has bolted, if you like, or the eagle has landed, or whatever other thing we might like to say.
Okay, let's look at the bigger picture here, because we call these creatures invasive species. It sounds like a military invasion. But is invasion the right word here once they've taken hold?
Well, an invasive species is a foreign species that has come here and has upset the ecosystem. You know, we're in Ireland, we had very little to come here naturally after the end of the last ice age. We were only 1,000 years in Ireland. We were only 1,000 years connected to mainland Europe, and then we became an island. So anything that came after 1,000 years after the last ice age was brought by people. A lot of it was grand. I mean, things like red deer were brought by people. Things we reckon like wolves, foxes, some of those things. But it's when something comes in and upsets the system here and starts pushing our stuff out and upsetting the balance of nature, that's what's considered to be an invasive species.
All non-native species.
No, it's not all. They're exotic species, but it's the ones that cause a problem. Like rhododendron is an invasive species, because rhododendron is evergreen. It grows continuously underneath the woodlands. It takes up all the light, and when the trees drop their acorns, they won't germinate because the whole place is covered in rhododendron. So the rhododendron is just there and nothing else. Our woodlands are gone. things like Sika deer, things like fallow deer brought in for the Normans, brought in the fallow deer, and Lord Powerscourt brought in the Sika deer in the 1840s to hunt. But they bred all over the place. We got rid of the wolves, who were their natural predator, and now these deer are all over the place, eating everything in sight. So our woodlands, are the ones that haven't got rhododendron in them, have been eaten by the deer. So if you plant a new lot of trees out and decide you're going to reforest, and you're out in Wicklow or something, you plant all these, so the deer will come in and gobble them all overnight. So they're an invasive species because of the damage that they cause. Things like
the grey squirrel.
That was brought in as a wedding present. Just six of them. There wasn't even many. And they had diseases. They were more aggressive. Not aggressive as in standing up and fighting, but they were able to eat things like unripe acorns, whereas our poor red fellas needed them to be ripe. So by the time they got round to looking for them, the other crowd had them all gobbled. So they were starved out of it. So they were brought in along for it, and they spread all along. When I came to Dublin, me and Finn McCool about 50 years ago, the squirrels in Dublin were all red.
Mm. Now there's none.
No, well, I mean, when I brought out Wild Dublin the first time in 2007, this red squirrel was on the cover because we had them in St. Anne's Park. We have none inside the M50 now because they've all become extinct. We've loads of grey squirrels, but not those. And of course, the grey squirrels, what do they eat? Nuts, yeah, right. But what do they eat the rest of the time? There's not nuts in springtime, there's not nuts in summer. So they eat the bark of trees, they destroy trees, they eat woods. I mean, they cause damage, and that's not great. And that's what's happening with the grey squirrels, for example. There are loads of invasive species in our waterways that are causing problems because they're using up all the oxygen. And the zebra mussel, which came in on the bottoms of boats that people didn't clean off, and they brought them over the back of their cars from somewhere else and put those into the lakes, and they have, you know, really reproduced like mad because our lakes are full of algae, and the place is now full of these mussels, which are absolutely blocking drains and blocking everything. They're a terrible pest and a nuisance. We have Himalayan balsam, which they brought in for the bees, but of course the Himalayan balsam grew like mad, and then of course it's an annual. Dies away in the wintertime, but leaves the riverbanks completely bare because there's no plants there any longer. And then the water comes out of the river in the floods, washes all the soil into the river, and we have a problem with our fish. So
some of them were accidental and some of them were deliberate. Well, but we just didn't realise the consequences of bringing them in.
Actually, we don't know anything about ecology till it goes wrong. I mean, this is the awful problem. We brought in mink because we thought we'd love to wear fur coats. And then Brigitte Bardot said it takes 40 dumb animals to make a mink coat and only one dumb animal to wear it. So the market fell out of the mink market, and they got into the waterways, and now the mink are a terrible predator and a nuisance in our waterways. We have otters in our waterways. Otters feed on our fish, but there's a balance of nature with the otters. I even have one in my Dublin cover because Dublin's rivers are actually full of otters because it shows there's plenty of salmon, there's plenty of fish, there's plenty of wildlife. But the mink, of course, doesn't confine itself to eating the fish. It'll eat the water hens, the coots, the moor hens, everything else. It'll devastate the whole area. There's no balance of nature there.
What have other countries done? You know, because I know some of them have taken pretty extreme measures to eliminate invasive species.
Well, they haven't worked very well. I mean, the big example is, I suppose, Australia and New Zealand, which had a whole different type of ecology because they were very much separated from the rest of the world before animals evolved more. So they're all marsupials, all like the fellas with the pockets. The kangaroos are the most example of that. But all of the animals that in New Zealand and Australia, all the mammals are all those kind of ones, whereas we have placentals. But when white people went over there after Cook in the end of the 1700s, they wanted to make it look like the British Isles from whence they came. So they brought over stuff to make themselves feel at home. And they outcompeted, they brought over different things. They brought over foxes, like to go fox hunting. They brought over birds, blackbirds, things like this. They brought in possums from Australia because they thought the possums would be nice to have little furry creatures. And
there's something crawling up my back at this moment. No. To talk of possums and mink or anyhow,
well,
go
they're
on.
They're nice furry creatures. I mean, they like cats and dogs with furry coats. I mean, they're just wild animals the same. I mean, stop thinking about it like that.
Rats.
Furry rats.
Anyhow, go on ahead.
No, but all of those things that were brought in, like the rats, for example, came in off ships when people were invading, the sailors coming in with these, and all the ground nesting birds. See, flying is very difficult, and why would you spend energy on flying if there's no enemies? So a lot of the birds that we had in these places were ground nesting birds. But the most famous example, I suppose, in New Zealand is the kiwi. And the kiwi nest on the ground. So, you know, when the rats came along, they could gobble up all the kiwis and the kiwis. So what they've done there is try to clear islands, to get out to the island and get rid of all the rats off the island, try and clear the islands.
They want to be predator-free by 2050. That's the plan in New Zealand.
But I mean, good luck with that, because the place is crawling with possums from Australia. I mean, they might get rid of some of the rats and things like this. And, you know, I mean, keep at it indeed. But I mean, once you let the genie out of the nest, I mean, Australia is the same. They brought in the cane toad, thought that was going to help. They brought in rabbits because the rabbits were going to be food, and then the rabbits were eating all the grass, and then they tried to get rid of the rabbits and they couldn't. I mean, they bring in things, you let the genie out of the bottle, and then it's very, very difficult. That's why we're so adamant about this Cornish. It's only barely here, it's got a toad. Let's clobber it now while the going is good before it gets a grip. And so even if they get 1,000 wrong records, for every right record they get, the National Parks and Wildlife Service are absolutely delighted. So do send in your records to the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
Yeah, invasives.ie is the website.
That's right, Sherry.
So get on there if you see anything. Well, Ina Luna, the idea behind this podcast is that we have good long interviews, 20 minutes, deep dives. We could have sat here for 2 hours, couldn't we?
How much should nobody ever get me to shut up except for turning off the red light?
Ina Luna, thanks so much for coming into me here on News Talk Daily today. That's it from the podcast for today and for this week. You can catch up on any of the episodes you missed over the weekend. That's actually when I do a lot of my podcast listening, you know, doing a bit of laundry on a Saturday morning. I do go to the Go Loud player or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. So until Monday morning, have a great weekend and try not to get stung.